Welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Oral History Project, where we record the oral histories of individuals who were involved in key Department of Corrections events. I'm DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. This oral history focuses on memories from the October 1989 riot at the State Correctional Institution at Camp Hill. Our guest today, September 29th, 2019, is Nick Chimenti. Thanks for joining us, Nick.
Yep, good evening.
As we begin this oral history, can you please tell me what your job was with the state police at the time, and tell me when you first became involved in the Camp Hill prison riot?
So at the time, I was on the job for 5 years, 4 to 5 years. I was probably in my fifth year and transferred. I first started out in Avondale, and I transferred to PSP York. I was stationed down at the York Barracks.
Okay.
And at some point, I went on the mounted team. I was into horses all my life. I used to work at Hershey Park years ago and at the Hershey Stables, and they had horses there. And so I kind of was into horses and had a great opportunity to get on the mounted team.
Nice. Okay, so it is Wednesday, October 25th, 1989, at about about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Where are you and what's happening?
So I would have been stationed at York, and I want to say that at that time I was already off duty, and we all got these phone calls at home. I was at home, and they said, the sergeant called in and said, you need to come back to the barracks right away. There's a prison riot going on. And we had no idea. There was no question. There was no cell phones back there. We didn't have any of that stuff. And so I hightailed it back to the barracks, not knowing what I was about to get involved with.
Mm. And then what happened?
So from that point, we get to the barracks, and they tell us that, hey, the Camp Hill prison riots are going off. There's riots up there. And I remember vividly jumping into a patrol car. I didn't drive. I can still remember sitting in the back seat. There was four of us. And, I just can't remember if we actually took. I think we did. We had helmets. We had old helmets, old blue helmets. And I want to say all I had with me was that blue helmet and riot sticks, and that was it. We didn't have any other gear other than our weapon,
Right.
And we responded as so. We're coming up 83, and I just remember seeing, we're coming towards the exit, and we see this huge plume of smoke, and we're like, geez, that must be a prison. So as we get closer, I never forget that I had an aunt that lived right there within 1 mile of the prison. Mm. And I felt bad for her, knowing that, the information that we were hearing, there was possible escapes and everything. But as we got closer, then we started to see this glow. And that's when we saw the fires. And you know what? I might even be confused between the first night. And no, that was the first night. I'm pretty sure of that. But I was in awe of what was going on. I couldn't believe that was on fire.
Right. So it started around 3 o'clock. So it was still daylight probably by the time you arrived then.
I would say that. It's just sketchy as to, what took place.
I was just trying to help you to see if that helped you a little bit. So you get there, and then what happens?
So we get there, we form up, and, there's a lot of, right out the gate, there's a lot of mass confusion. We're waiting for other troopers to arrive before we go into the prison.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was a young trooper. I only had 5 years on the job. I considered myself, at the time, a tough guy, but I was like looking at this going, is this really happening? I just couldn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I remember going in as a group, and it was just total melee. I remember seeing some, you know, prisoners running around, some that weren't even that weren't even riding there. They weren't a part of it. They didn't know where to go.
Right, because not everybody was involved in the actual rioting itself.
No, there was, as you well know, there was only a certain percentage of them, and those certain percentage were mostly, you know, still inside, you know, raising hell.
Right, and I think with the state police, the DOC staff was working to try to contain everything over to the one side of the institution, and I guess everybody was pretty much successful doing that. What happened then once you were inside the institution?
So I also remember vividly being very, very close. I guess they lit on fire the, there were like trailers, and I think they used them for classrooms, or I'm not sure what they were for, what exactly they were for, but it was like, I don't know, maybe 10 of these kind of portable type buildings, and those were on fire. We were outside there, and I can still remember to this day that, you know, the noises and the gas sounds of things, you know, exploding inside. And I don't mean by anything, just the pops of the intense fire. And at that point, I want to say I ran into, I have an uncle that's on the job, Trooper Pete Comente, and he was stationed at Troop J. And next thing you know, it was another platoon going by us, and they were from Troop J, and they ended up assigning this platoon to work with our platoon. And it was kind of cool that I got to meet up with my uncle, who was, you know, a seasoned trooper, and it was kind of comforting to me to know that, you know, he was there by my side. So we got to pretty much work together for the rest of that night.
Wow. And what did your two troops do together then?
We were told to secure the one side of the prison. I can't remember, you know, what block it was. It was a block there. There was inmates yelling out. You know, some were trying to surrender. They were, you know, holding out their shirts. And we were just kind of holding that, containing that area, you know, from anybody getting out from that area.
Right.
But meanwhile, you had literally, you know, these portable buildings on fire, fully engulfed. And we were like, are they putting these out? What are they going to do? You know, we're talking amongst ourselves, and there was no intention. There was just too much going on. There was no intention of any of that coming. And, you know, at that time, you know, it was total chaos.
Total chaos. That's exactly how a lot of people explain it and describe it.
So I remember one guy. I do remember one guy, and this guy was almost surrendering, and I felt bad for the guy. The guy, all he had on was just his underwear. And I remember my uncle going over to him and trying to help this guy out. The guy wasn't, like I said, he wasn't rioting, as far as we knew, you know. And they took this kid. Took him into custody, and he got shoved away. But I think at first, you know, nobody knew what part this guy did, but it was very obvious to him that he wasn't one of the rioters. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, they, I'm sure it was bad. I'm sure it was very bad for, you know, the inmates that were in there that weren't part of the riots.
Right. And there was a mention that a lot of them did try to separate themselves from the others. They would just go and sit in one of the yards and kind of stay out of the way. So what was the rest of that night like for you?
So, just, you know, there's not much that I can remember more, other than, you know, just I remember, you know, one of the things that I still vividly remember in my mind, and it's just weird. And when these places were burning, there was like, I don't know, like the insulation up in the ceiling of it. I mean, there was nowhere for us to go. We were almost we were almost comforted by the warmth of it because it was, you know, it was a little chilly. Mm-hmm. And I still remember just looking at them, going, "Wow, look at those colors!" You know, it was just a weird thing to observe. You know, we were sitting there watching, you know, waiting to make sure nobody else is getting out, but you know, right to the right of us, you know, 10 yards away is this unbelievable fire. We knew there was nobody in these pods. I think they were called pods.
And, yeah, we called them modulars.
Modular, yeah, that's exactly what they were.
Yep.
And I guess because of the material that it was made out of, and it was just like blues and yellow and red color. It was the craziest thing to see.
Wow. So that night ends. When did you go home?
So that night ends. We were there for a while. I didn't even know it until I found out about this whole thing. It's 30 years ago.
30 years, yep.
That's pretty amazing. It doesn't seem like that.
Right.
Most certain things I can, you know, remember like yesterday, but yet it's just fuzzy as to, you know, how long we were there that night. I was at, like I said, York. It wasn't very far, so, you know, we were there for a while, but I do remember it being over. They told us, you know, it was over, and they were all contained, and you know, we weren't no longer needed.
Okay.
So we got shipped back.
Right, and so then you probably just went to work the next day for your normal shift.
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I don't recall that part. I just don't.
You might have been sleeping. You might have slept in most of the morning because you know, everybody was really tired.
You're probably right.
And then the next night at around 6:30, the inmates broke out again, and this time it was even worse than the night before. Tell me what your involvement was with it the second night.
And the second night, when we first heard this, we were all in disbelief. We couldn't believe that, you know, that was taking place, that we thought that, you know, everything was secure and it was all done, you know, it was all done. Well, then I got a call from up at the academy, being a mounted team member, and if I remember correctly, I was one of six that was on the mounted team. And I'll never forget to this day, I won't say who the trooper was, but I remember getting ribbed, you know, guys busting my chops, you know, being on the mounted team, because you would, you know, you'd go away for training, or you'd, we were in a lot of parades, you know, we would do a lot of stuff like that, community relations stuff, and in a lot of parades, and this one trooper would always bust my chops, saying, what do the horses do, what do you guys do, you know, they're not good for nothing, I don't know why we have these things. Well, I never forget, and he won't either. He knows who he is. I think he retired. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, that's so, okay.
So he was. But anyway, I never forget him coming up to me there when I was on horseback, when we finally, at the end there, shuttled all those prisoners. And I think we had, I don't know, 1,200, 1,400 or whatever prisoners out in the yard. And we could move, you know, six of us could move a lot of people.
Wow.
And I never forget him coming up to the back of me and saying, "Man, I'm glad you guys here. I'm glad you guys are here. I can't believe you moved all those people like that." I mean, he felt very secure because he knew that, you know, these horses were, you know, they were trained. We were trained, and we could move a lot of people. And those, you know, the inmates were scared to death of those horses.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you recall when you first were entering the scene, what the reaction of the inmates were to the horses?
So they, you know, when we come in, you know, it was immediate. There was no, they didn't mess around with any of those. I mean, at some point, you know, they would direct us to move. You know, we'd escort large groups of inmates. And but I do remember at the one point when, you know, one of the points, once we had all of them out in the yard and they were getting a little, you know, crazy, and we had to put a certain amount up into one of the corners, and six horses could move, you know, a couple hundred guys very easily. They wanted no parts of those horses. You know, you're talking about, you know, it's huge horses, and they were deathly afraid of them.
Wow.
They were. And
Is that how you spent the majority of your time then, on
that
horseback?
Right there, I want to say, and I sent, we spoke via email or whatever, but I want to say that was the night that we spent 28 hours in the saddle.
Mm.
And so much that when I went back later after we took our first break, you know, to go home and sleep or go to the hotel there, wherever we were, I can't remember that. I know there was a little small hotel there, but our first night we spent 28 hours in the saddle. You just came out to eat or to go to the bathroom. And I actually had, I had to laugh, was later, I actually had saddle sores from the underwear that I had on.
Right.
And that was, when I knew I was going back into it, that hurt so bad from peeing in. I know it sounds crazy, but so I actually went and, you know, they didn't have these kind of stuff. So I actually went and cut a pair of long underwear off and used it because it was smooth in the back and it didn't rub into your butt.
Right.
And that's what, you know, a couple of the other guys did that too. But,
had that been the longest amount of time that you'd spent in a saddle?
Yeah, that was, no, nobody, I don't think anybody ever did that. You know, you got off, it just felt good to, you know, to get off the horse, you know, get out of there. And, just either stand up or do whatever you had to do. But like I said, those horses were crucial.
Right.
And I didn't even, you know, I didn't even realize, you know, so much our capability until we had to do what we had to do. And it's.
And then, so you were in the saddle for 28 hours. So during that time frame, everything kind of came to a conclusion with the state police's assault back on the institutions and getting everything. Go ahead.
It would have. And one of the other things that I remember vividly is that, and that would have been once we had control, when I was up there a few days later, you know, I don't know, second or third day after that, where we were just guarding that area, but it got very, very cold at night. We were comfortable, but you know, you had all these inmates, and I never forget they had the clothes on their back. That's all they had. Well, they brought in all these tarps to cover them, and it was just a surreal picture to see, you know, vision to see that, you know, all these inmates were laying on the ground, and it looked like one big blob of everybody covered with all these tarps.
It must have looked like a bunch of body bags.
It did. That's exactly what it looked like. And they were like a dark gray colored tarps, that, and they just were using them as blankets. And, you know, there was a lot of issues going on, you know. They had to go to the bathroom. They had to do, you know, whatever. We didn't have any of none of those porta potties were brought in until later.
Mm.
They had no food. Well, that would have been the same for us too. You know, there was no food for us right out the gate, and the logistics that was, you know, the other stuff that was going on the backside, you know, that we weren't aware of, you know, had to have been pretty tedious also. You know, trying to feed X amount of, you know, troopers that were there, mm. or get
yeah.
them, you know, get us water or whatever that we need.
Exactly. So
let alone the inmates.
Right. Because I think I read in my research that just for state police alone, there were probably about 800 of you there. And you can add on top of that all of the firefighters and EMTs and local police and then DOC staff. So there's a lot of people to feed.
And I'll tell you, it was an instant brotherhood too.
Mm.
I don't, it's just something I can't explain. I remember that too, you know, just, it was an instant brotherhood between the, you know, the DOC and between the state troopers and the firemen. I just, everybody just worked together, and as you know, it worked out well.
Right.
As far as us taking back over the prison.
Yes, and thank goodness. So what happened after the prison was taken back, and the next couple of days after that, how were you used on the horse?
So, yeah, we would have been there for, you know, regular patrols and helping to move prisoners, you know, large groups of prisoners back into cell blocks once they got those all cleaned up and they're all searched.
And I think I've seen some pictures where moving them back into the cell blocks, they were, all of the inmates were kind of like in single file, and there was a horse in the front and then a horse in the back. I think that's kind of how it appears that they were moved.
Yeah, I see that, and that doesn't, I don't recall any a single file. I just remember kind of large groups of inmates, you know, with DOC and troopers, you know, mm-hmm. to the fronts and sides, and we kind of like, you know, rode alongside of them. They knew they weren't going to go anywhere at that point.
I just have a crazy question about the horses. I've never really been, I've been around a horse once, but how did you feed the horses during all of this?
How did what?
How were the horses fed throughout this whole ordeal?
So we had an old, all the stuff is brand new stuff right now, but we had an old truck. Apparently they used to use that for the rodeo years ago, and they had hoses, you know, to get the horses water. And I want to say they brought in buckets at some point. When I say buckets, I mean big barrels, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they filled those up, and you know, they had trucks there that I just don't remember me bringing in, you know, the hay for them to eat or grain that they had, but I just don't recall that part of it, you know what I mean? But I do remember, you know, them bringing hay in there for the horses too, you know, because they needed to get taken care of also.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. What else do you recall from the riots that you'd like to share?
I'm trying to think what else. I do know that I volunteered for almost however long we had that. How long did the state police have that? A year afterwards?
I believe so, at least.
So?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I would have had a whole year of going up there. I always volunteered to go up there, and I worked, you know, I would work the shifts, and I want to say they were 12-hour shifts.
Yes.
If I recall, and you stayed at this little hotel right there off of 83, and I still remember going in there. I guess at one point, I know something I wanted to talk about too. But one thing that stuck out in my mind once we took that back over, and that was the smell. Mm-hmm. It was a distinct smell that you can't. I can't describe, and it's when I went back in later to another state prison, it just has that distinct smell.
Oh,
and the kitchen area, you know, they wanted to, that was the other thing too. They, at first, guys were, you know, troopers were going in, and they had, you know, inmates in there cooking, you know, still cooking, and I wouldn't eat it. I didn't eat it. And I didn't trust what was going on. I had heard some things that what some of the inmates were doing to the food once they were knew that they were actually preparing food for the troopers.
Mm.
And I wasn't going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up, I guess, you know, bringing us food in there, and then we actually were able to pack stuff to bring in.
Right. And like you said, the state police were there for quite a while. I know that I've talked to a number of people, including...
Right, and a lot of the, you know, we were just young guys just working, you know, to you know, because we wanted to do it, and you got overtime for it, and, you know, if you wanted to work it, you worked it.
Right.
You know, you had guys, you had some of the older guys that were thinking, oh, this is a great detail, you know... They're going to add that to their pension.
Exactly.
You know, so we kind of, you know, they kind of, the old timers kind of laughed at the younger guys, you know, and they were, I get it. They were taking that taking that detail or for however many times they could to bump their pension up.
Yeah. And eventually they slowly phased the state police out. So instead of being in every cell block, they would move them to a certain place within the facility, then outside the facility, and then, and I mean, this is over a period of time, and then then they were released. And so
I want to add too, you know, I made that statement about, you know, the guys working overtime, you know, the old timers, and I'm calling them the old timers, and now look at me, I'm one of the old timers. But I made that statement about, you know, them working there, you know making overtime, working, they worked for every penny of that, and they deserved every penny of that, because there's not many people that took the step towards danger.
Mm.
So I didn't mean that, you know, disrespectfully in any way, but
right,
you know, how many jobs, how many careers where your part of your job is to run towards danger, not away from it.
Exactly. Well, we're thankful that you guys were there. Is there anything else that you would like to share?
I just off the top of my head, I can't recall. Well, you know what? There was another story.
Oh, okay.
I remember in one of the blocks, and two small things that I remember, and I remember seeing this sign, and it's, I've always asked about it years ago. I asked, you know, hey, is that sign still there? There was a sign inside of D block, and apparently D block was the most incorrigible inmates of, you know, of the prison itself. But I never forget the sign that hung above there, and that sign said, what goes around comes around. And that never went out of my mind. Just remember seeing that sign there. And another story was that I was working with my uncle, and they were, you know, they DOC, you know, the, when we were working with them, they were telling us, you know, when we were walking the blocks, they would tell us, hey, make sure you're walking on the outside of the walls, because they're going to throw, you know, they were throwing urine on us, or throwing feces on us. And so we did. I mean, it stank. I still remember. I didn't get any thrown on me, but I was very cautious walking the halls. But I never forget, there was a kid in there, and we didn't have our name tags on. And this kid had his back against the bars, and he had both of his hands up behind his head, and he was doing like sit-ups, just doing exercises, pulling his knees up to his chest, almost doing like an LC, like a gymnast would.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid was ripped, and he says, hey, he yells out to us, he goes, hey, Drewer, he goes, are you two brothers? And we kind of looked at each other and like, wow, we weren't brothers, it was my uncle, but it was kind of cool that he knew that we were, you know, family members. And we talked to him a little bit about, I don't recall the conversation, but it was just kind of funny to us that, you know what I mean, that he noticed that we were related.
Well, that's very interesting, and that shows how observant inmates are.
Absolutely.
They watch everything that is going on. They're there for 24 hours. Our staff were only there for about 8 hours. So, yes, that's...
Yep, they didn't miss a trick.
Mm-mm.
They did not miss a trick.
Very interesting. Neat story.
So that's kind of... I apologize. I can't remember anything else. But,
that's okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for participating in our project.
Something as you said that, hold on the train.
Okay.
I was on horseback, and there was a guy with a t-shirt on, and this was I can't think of the name of the group, but it was some kind of it was a rap group back then. It's on the tip of my tongue, but their logo was, a logo the inside of a scope targeted on a cop, and it was like a cop killer, you know.
Mm.
And this guy had one of those t-shirts on it.
When you say this
on
guy
his back, he had a t-shirt on
an inmate,
so it was an inmate.
Okay.
and he didn't have where he would have got it. I have no idea, but he had it on, and he was causing trouble. I forget what the story was with him, but we ended up jamming him up against, you know, two horses, had him in between us, and I grabbed onto the back of that shirt, and I saw that because we had pointed it out. I said, "Look at this guy," and I actually grabbed on the back of his back of that T-shirt and ripped the whole back part of it straight up, and I had the whole piece all intact. I've had it for years.
I was going to say, is that your souvenir?
I did. I had that souvenir for years. I have no idea whatever took place of that, but you know, somebody explained to me then later. They said, "You know what that is? That, you know, that guy, you know, supports killing cops. You know, wearing a shirt like that. Where the heck he would have got it in there? I have no idea."
Well, you know, they used to allow outside clothing, and I think the inmates were allowed to wear it in the evening. So who knows why that? Why back then anybody would let that kind of a shirt in? I don't know.
Yeah, it was a picture like almost if you were looking through a rifle scope,
mm-hmm.
and it was trained right on, you know. Police officer.
Wow, you're gonna have to find that.
Yeah, I have no idea what took place with that, but yeah. I do remember that vividly.
Yeah, great stories. Is there anything else that you want to share?
I don't think so, and I thank you so much. I'm very humbled to actually, you know, get the call and to do something like this and to be part of it.
Well, thank you very much.